This week on Flyover Country with Scott Jennings.
Just the other day, he was saying our relationship with Israel is ironclad. And today, he's essentially throwing up his hands, spooked, I guess, by these college protests and saying, well, we're going to not supply weapons because we're going to try to micromanage this.
Attention passengers, we ask that you please fasten your seatbelts at this time and secure all baggage underneath your seat or in the overhead compartments. Flyover Country with Scott Jennings is prepared for takeoff.
And the panel is with me now. David, let's just start with, we just heard President Biden say about Trump.
Yeah.
He said that, I promise you, he will not accept the results of the election, obviously, presumably if he loses. I promise you, and he's dangerous. Very explicit on that.
Yeah, and I think past his prologue on this, right? I mean, with Trump, either he wins or the election's stolen. There's no possibility of another result, and we saw that evidence itself, in the insurrection. Even when he won in 2000, remember, in 2016, he put a commission together because he was incensed that he had lost the popular vote by 3 million and suggested that that vote was stolen. They couldn't find any stolen votes then either. But I think he's right, and I think it is dangerous because the stakes for Donald Trump now are higher. If he loses this election, he's still facing trial. I think this is a very legitimate concern.
MJ, the president did make major news on Israel in several places, saying that, yes, U.S. bombs have been used to kill civilians, and saying that he's had enough. We are walking away from Israel's ability to wage war in these population centers, artillery shells, the offensive weapons. This is new.
It's new. This is the president articulating for the first time what exactly the consequences would be if Israel were to cross his red line. And remember, that red line is if Israel actually goes into Rafah, the heavily populated areas of Rafah, which so far the U.S. assesses Israel hasn't done yet. That is the U.S. policy that we are now hearing straight from the president's mouth. And Aaron, I was thinking about just the timing of this interview and the fact that you got to ask him these questions about Israel and Rafah at this moment. Because if you look back on the last week, U.S. officials and White House officials made really clear that the decision to pause the arms shipment was an incredibly sensitive one. They would not even confirm to reporters that pause had happened, let alone elaborate on the reason. And now I suspect when going forward, White House officials are asked about this, they're going to point to these words from the president as the new U.S. policy.
And Jeff, that was a significant move from him to say, I've spoken to Bibi, I've told the War Cabinet. You know, essentially, enough is enough were the words he said. It is wrong.
It certainly was. And if you look at the trajectory of his remarks since October 7th, he certainly has not moved nearly as much as his progressive base would like him to. As he hears the protests on college campuses, he sees the Genocide Joe signs as he travels around from event to event.
Yep.
So he has not done nearly enough to abate the protests, but he has moved considerably from where his history would suggest that he would have. He was locked armed in arm, a literal hug with Netanyahu when he was there right after that. So this is different than that. What goes forward, I think, is the open question. He opened a door today that I think is very significant. We'll see what happens in the coming days.
And you shake your head, Scott, because those who, of course, want the full-throated Israel support, of which there are many in the Democratic Party, this is not what they wanted to hear.
Just the other day, he was saying our relationship with Israel is ironclad. And today, he's essentially throwing up his hands, spooked, I guess, by these college protests and saying, well, we're going to not supply weapons because we're going to try to micromanage this. I want to hear the President of the United States unequivocally state and understand who the enemy and who the real cause of all this is.
But he did
Hamas.
Say that they're killing civilians using American weapons.
Who uses civilians as human shields? It's Hamas. Israel and the United States are not the problem here. Hamas is the problem, and Israel cannot have peace and security until Hamas is defeated, and he is shackling our ally by micromanaging this. And by the way, less bombs means more fighting on the ground, and that means more dead Israeli soldiers. That's the policy.
So let me just say this, and I say this as the son of a Jewish refugee. I feel very strongly about Israel. I was devastated by what happened on October 7th. that doesn't prevent me from feeling solicitude for the starving children of Gaza and civilians who are collateral damage in this war. And so, you know, I accept the political calculus. I've lived in this world all my life. It's also true that I think the president feels solicitude for these people. I don't think it's just the students protesting. He's been talking about this for months. As for standing with Israel, when the bombs flowed in from, when the drones and the missiles flowed in from Iran, it was the United States who shot them down. He has provided most of the weaponry that is being used right now by the Israelis. He went and, yes, he hugged Netanyahu. And on that very day, he told him, don't make the mistake we made. Don't. Right. Pursue.
And he talked about that today.
Republicans in Congress are going to be livid about this issue
because
right
they
here.
They think they have a good issue. Well, no. I get it. I think they think that, no. they, you know, he's the president of the United States. They're just politicians trying to take advantage of a situation.
Well, no, I think they support our ally, and maybe he doesn't. They're going to recall a time when we impeached the president of the United States for withholding military aid authorized by Congress from Ukraine. $400 million. That was the basis of the impeachment. This is congressionally authorized military aid to our ally, and he is withholding it for political reasons.
The basis, wait one second. I'm sorry, it's your show. The basis of that impeachment was that the president of the United States called the president of Ukraine, and he said, I want you to do me a favor and open an investigation on the person who I think may be my opponent in the next election. That was the basis of the
And he wants Israel to stand down on Rafah because his base is mad at him. It's a political reason.
Scott, the analogy just doesn't hold.
Oh, can I, MJ, on this, though, is it why he chose to say this today and make such a significant statement? What is the motivation for it at this moment?
First of all, can I say, I know that one of the big headlines was the news he made about the consequences for Israel, the weapons withholding and all of that. I think the moment where you asked him, have people in Gaza die because of those bombs referring to the bombs that the U.S. has supplied to Israel, and he answered, civilians have been killed in Gaza as a consequence of those bombs, I found that moment to be just incredibly stark and just a very black and white acknowledgement from the president on not only American complicity, but the president's complicity, right? These are his decisions. And by the way, I mean, we're talking about all of the political ramifications and the fallout. That complicity is precisely what the people who are protesting are angry about. We don't know if those words and those actions will do much to calm the people who are that angry. But I do think the fact that he sort of came out and acknowledged that was a really important moment.
And, you know, we're here in Wisconsin, obviously, because it's a must-win state. It was a must-win state, as I said to him, for him, for Trump the last time around. And he chose to come here today to a plant where Trump had that huge announcement with the golden shovel for Foxconn. The jobs didn't materialize, Jeff, and now here we are, and President Biden saying 100,000 people are going to be trained in AI here. But on the economy, he was very defensive. He said he's already turned it around.
There were a few words in there. He said, we've already turned it around. Of any words from the interview that could be used in a Republican ad against him, that is it. Every time the president has come to Wisconsin this year, this is the fourth visit, he comes with an achievement. This was $3.3 billion, hugely significant. He's done a bridge in Superior. He's done lead pipes here in Milwaukee. I've been along on several of these trips. So, yes, there are significant achievements, but he also said these jobs won't come for 3 more years or so. What voters do not see right now is immediate aid. They see the inflation. They see the gas prices. But people are split. I was talking to voters here throughout the week, and a retired couple, Dennis and Maureen Glenn, said that they do not blame the president for this. They wish younger voters, like some people in their family, would tighten their belts. By generic food. So you see an age split here in terms of what the thing is. But job creation versus inflation, inflation is a big problem for the president. The White House knows it.
I don't understand this. I don't understand all these months later. You know, I thought they spent $25 million mistakenly last fall touting Bidenomics and making the same argument that the president's making here. It is absolutely true. The world was plunged into an economic crisis, and America was plunged into an economic crisis by the pandemic, and we've come back faster than almost any other country. And he's right about that, but that's not the way people are experiencing the economy. They're experiencing it through the lens of the cost of living. And he is a man who's built his career on empathy. Why not lead with the empathy? And I think he's making a terrible mistake. You know, it may not be, if he doesn't win this race, it may not be Donald Trump that beats him. It may be his own pride.
I mean, he was, you know, when I asked the question, going through some of the negatives, when he said we've already turned it around, and I mentioned that Trump leads him in terms of voter trust in the economy by a wide margin, which he does in every poll, he says, the polling data has been wrong all along. You guys do a poll at CNN. How many folks do you call to even get one response?
I mean, he was quite defensive about that, and he's been defensive about polling in the past. But it's true that you can point to positive data in the economy, but the reality still remains that that hasn't translated into positive economic outlook across the board. But, you know, just on the question of, you wonder how much an announcement like the one that we saw today actually matters to people. I was at that Microsoft event, and I was in the bathroom after the president had spoken, and this woman walks in. She's by herself, and I hear her. She's just, like, clapping. And she's saying, yes, yes, working factories. And she's not talking to anybody. She's, like, saying this to herself. Clearly, she is excited. And I just think, like, we shouldn't underestimate that something like that does mean something to a community, especially like this one. They were so let down by the Foxconn situation. But I think you've got to sort of, how complicated this is when you ask him about the day-to-day pain that people are feeling because of prices being so high. And his answer was, well, people have more money to spend now. And yeah, they're angry, but things cost more. Yeah. What do you do about that?
So, Scott, there was one other thing that we talked about. I want to play it, but this is just the juxtaposition, right? Trump came here last week on his day off from the Stormy Daniels trial, which is Wednesday. He came because the Wisconsin must win for him, too. But the way they're spending every other day is very different. So I asked President Biden whether he's following the trial. Here's what he said.
So I've been in the courtroom a couple of days.
God,
have you been following that at all?
Not only on the evening news, I catch.
So only on the evening news. I mean, he wouldn't try to disdain and say I'm not, but at night. Because during the day, his days are very different. He's on the campaign trail or he's dealing with other. Whereas Trump, I mean, when you look at that side by side, forget the golden shovel. It's very different.
Yeah, and I've had my doubts about whether a conviction or an acquittal or a hung jury here would have any impact on Trump's image, no matter what happens. And so Biden says he's following it at night. He's following it more than most Americans are following it at all. They are following this conversation about food prices. I agree with Axe. I think his economic messaging is incredibly weak. I thought he whined when you correctly.
Can I change my point of view then?
No, you can't. And then I thought he whined. You correctly confronted him with the statistics and the polling, and he whined about that. And then, of course, he went wobbly on Israel. I think he is desperate for. I think he must be mortified when he looks at poll after poll that says the American people trust Donald Trump more on the economy. They trust him to be a strong leader, and they believe that the world is in chaos because he's weak and Trump is strong. It must be mortifying, and he can't find a way out of this cul-de-sac.
All right. Well, all of you, thank you so much, and so wonderful to all be together here in Milwaukee on a beautiful day, which it was not yesterday, but we got what a gorgeous spring day here in Wisconsin.
Flyover Country with Scott Jennings is a production of Bluegrass Media Lab, coming to you from the heart of Middle America, Louisville, Kentucky. If you like what you heard, subscribe to Flyover Country on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.